Yeah.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you know how you're like at a party and all of a sudden you're at the house party and you're like, oh my God, who is this beautiful woman?
Yeah.
You go up, you do a little chit chat chat, she's laughing, you're laughing, you're like, oh my God, this girl's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You seem to have the same interest, and then suddenly she says, hey, you want to meet my boyfriend?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, fuck. And then she introduces her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa. Then he starts laughing at your jokes. You start laughing at his jokes. You guys start doing like a handshake and a hug. And you're like, oh my God, this guy's so cool.
Yeah.
And you want to hang out with the dude. And he wants to hang out with you. And then you guys exchange numbers. But at the same time, you're thinking, fuck. Now that annoying girlfriend of his wants to hang out with you too. Because, you know, you guys were friends first, kind of.
But you thought you liked her first.
Yeah, but once you find out that she's taken, especially with a cool dude like that, off the table, I just want to hang out with the bro. I just want to hang out with the dude.
Yeah.
And so now you're just like, what do I do now? Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. I think the opposite kind of happens to me sometimes where I meet a guy.
Yeah.
And then I am very much connect, for whatever reason, I typically connect with women better than I do men sometimes. Right. I don't know why. I'm just like, I find more to talk about usually.
Yes.
But I have a lot of guy friends too. But so I've like had the situation where I like talk to a guy at a party and then he introduces his girlfriend. And then we have so much to talk about. But it's like platonic. Like,
of course.
So,
but you can't just be like,
and now this fucking bozo dude's like, yeah, do you want to talk about sports? And I'm like, dude, fuck your sports. I'm trying to talk about heart. I'm trying to talk about love of poetry.
But now
I don't even like poetry.
But now it's kind of,
I'm trying to talk about food, skincare, about food, yeah,
manicures, pedicures. I get my period two type situation. Is that where you're going with this?
Precisely.
Thank you.
I get my period too.
But then wouldn't it be kind of weird? You're like, yo, bro,
I just want to hang out with your girl.
Like you.
I like you, but I'm trying to hang out with your girl. No, it'd be totally weird. That would be really weird.
Yes.
It's a lot easier to say to a girl, I think, that you met first, hey, I'm just trying to hang out with your... Or I don't even think you need to say that. That would be crazy if you said that.
I wonder how, like, how my friends that are girls, how we've become friends. I'm trying to figure that out. Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, how did that come to be?
Yeah.
Oh, well. I don't know. I met like one of my friends.
Do you have more girlfriends or guy friends?
I have a mix, but I want to say that I have, now as I've gotten older, more guy friends than girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty like equal split. For example, one friend of a girl that we're really close, how I met her randomly was she was playing tennis at like night in Dolores Park in San Francisco. Dolores Park. And I go, yo.
Hey, yo!
Hey, that's always, do you have an extra racket? And she goes, yes. I'm like, bro, can I play with you?
Jonathan, you are like not even real. I can't even believe you do that. You do these things that I'm like, I don't want to use the word crazy because that means it's negative. It's like crazy in a good way. I mean,
you've seen me actually do this in real life.
Yeah,
so it's
like it's so like, you put yourself out there, and I think I want the world to be more like that, where we're like, yo, I don't know you, but I kind of want to.
Yeah, that's exactly. I was like,
let's play tennis. Do you need someone else? You know, like.
Right. Well, I was like, hey, do you have an extra racket? Yo, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, because this is what I believe, Noah. Every single individual out there wants to be able to connect with others.
Yeah.
And if a good, great person. Okay, hey, Jonathan.
Are you pointing to yourself?
Yeah.
And if a good, great person in this room...
Who doesn't have any alternative motive.
Yeah.
I just wanted to play tennis, and she was right there, and even though I was wearing jeans, she felt alone. So I asked...
Wait, so you were like walking, like, I kind of want to play... And you saw the court, and you're like,
I saw the court. I saw the court. I was with my friend, and I'm like, I kind of want to play tennis right now. I walk up, I do the little stretch, and this girl just has a racket, and she's like... kind of like on the tennis court by herself. And I go, hey, hi, how's it going?
Yeah.
I don't know if you're alone or not, but I was wondering, do you have an extra racket? She goes, yes. I'm like, hey, I don't know who you're waiting for, but my friend and I was wondering, maybe we could just play with you, rally a bit as you're waiting for whoever you're waiting for. Is that cool? Can we play tennis with you? And she's like, okay. And I'm like, oh, by the way, I'm Jonathan. This is Markion. What's your name? She goes, Vicky. And then we just start playing tennis until her partner arrives. And then I grab her phone number, and then suddenly, out of nowhere, we end up becoming friends. But see, here's the key with, I think when it comes to friends that are girls, it's very crucial that you step down the line right in the beginning. And you go, what's up, bro? How's it going?
Yeah.
Dude. Right. I don't play the coy game, which is, let's play tennis. Hey, dude. Hey, friend. Let's get to know each other. And then 2 weeks later, I really like you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Ugh,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
gross.
Yeah.
Anyway, hello. What's up? Hello, crew. How's it going?
That's hilarious.
My name is Jonathan Carano.
And I'm Noah Findling.
And welcome to
The Bottle Club. And we're going to talk about some things.
So over the weekend,
yeah,
I hung out with some really cool friends in mm-hmm. San Francisco. But you know what happens in San Francisco?
People smoke weed and everything's so expensive.
Exactly. So I haven't smoked weed in like 4 months.
Wow.
And I've been like staying away. But every single time I go to San Francisco and meet this couple, they like to do the drugs, the DRUGs, microdosing on mushrooms and stuff. And he goes, you know, yo, do you want to smoke some weed? I do a little huff puff. I'm addicted. I love it.
I can't imagine you stoned. You loved it?
Well, so here's the thing why I don't like being stoned.
Yeah.
I love the first like 30 seconds.
Me too.
There's like, okay, I don't know about you, but this
you're
is
like, ooh.
Oh, bro. And I want you. Ooh. I want you
it's
to.
It's like a cozy sleeping
it's
bag.
It's cozy sleeping bag. It's yeah. like this. I feel like, especially if it's indica hybrid. You feel like liquid is like metal liquid, cool, chill liquid is going up your spine.
Yeah.
It goes inside every single crack of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then a hand comes in and just pulls your head back like a massage. And then as you play Odessa, okay?
Yeah.
Every single
and
beat.
It feels just like I'm just.
Imagine like a little tiny like person.
Yeah.
Just hitting your head and it lights up like Simon Says every single time you hit a beat. And you're like, oh.
Yeah.
That's how it feels for like maybe the first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then after this, you're like, I'm trapped.
Yeah.
Get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I want to control my movements and my mind.
Yeah.
Does that happen to you when you smoke
oh,
weed?
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, you know, it used to not. Weed used to be very medicinal for
yes.
me. It used to shut me down, you know, stop making me like anxious and like calm me down. And then I don't know some, I mean, I think in the pandemic, I really started using it a lot, you know, it wasn't like I was high all day, but I was smoking pot every day, like at night when things were kind of done, I would do that. Or if I had a day where I had nothing to do, I would be like, I'll start the day like that.
Right.
I'll end the day not stoned or like in the afternoon. But somewhere, I don't know, it kind of like turned on me. Like the last, like, I would say like since last November, it just started to turn on me.
And how? What do you mean turned on you?
I just like, I was having, it was just making me so paranoid.
Yeah.
And so like, so anxious and so really critical of myself. And I didn't realize it
mm-hmm.
in the moment. Like, I just thought, like, this is what it's like to be stoned now, you know?
What do you mean, like, you huff and you, like...
Like...
It's like, every single day, I'm going to feel stoned?
No, so I would, like, smoke, and then I would be like, you know, for example, I'd be like, I'm a loser. And nobody likes me. And, or I'd, like... Or sometimes if I was like gonna go brainstorm,
yes,
on like especially if I do it on a weekend,
yeah,
I'd like smoke a little, go for a walk, maybe go to a coffee shop, mm. and the whole time I'm just like, dude, you're alone on a Saturday, thinking, you're a fucking loser. Why don't you have any friends? You don't have any friends. Why aren't you like out with your friends on a Saturday? Why? And then I would always be like, why am I being so mean to myself? I'm enjoying myself. Like, I like what I'm doing. Like,
but
and also, like, I do have friends and I do hang out with them on Saturdays.
Right.
But I like to take some time for myself, you know? Or I would be like, yeah, I'd be like calling myself a loser, being mean to myself, saying I have no friends, you know, saying I suck, I'm not talented, whatever, and I'm not funny and all this shit. And I was having these thoughts like over and over again. And they would come up. They began when I was high,
right.
and when I would be sober, I wouldn't have them. But then the thoughts started to be carrying into my sober state.
Oh, so like the weed was pushing, like increasing your anxiety, increasing your depression in some sort of way.
Yeah. So then now when I was sober, I was having these thoughts.
Right.
And it took me a second to realize that when I was having these thoughts, when I was sober, like it was all rooted in my consciousness when I was smoking.
And oh, okay.
It was bleeding into my, you know, sober consciousness.
So basically,
my sober state.
So basically, when you're saying, well, it was making
my subconscious. It was making me actually believe these thoughts that I was having when I was high.
And it strengthened so much that when you were quote unquote sober, that all these negative thoughts would still stick with you.
Yeah, like they were real. Like they were real anxiety, not like paranoia when someone's high. Which plenty of people have, and they're like, oh, I was just high. That's not, I don't really think like that. I don't really believe the cops are outside my house, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I was having, it was carrying into my sobriety, and I was like, oh man, this is not good. Like, and then I'm like, why? Once I realized like, oh, like these thoughts were starting when I was high, mm-hmm. bleeding into my sobriety. Once I realized that, I was like, what am I doing this for?
Yeah, what are you doing this for?
What benefit? Because it started when I first started smoking pot. I liked it because it shut. Because I am an anxious person as is, but I've been working on that a lot in therapy, and it's been getting better. But when I was smoking more pot, it was just going crazy. But like when I started smoking pot, yeah, it would be like a complete shutdown. It'd be like we're shutting off all valves in his brain, and he's gonna think about nothing for the next, you know, two.
It makes you
hours.
Lose control for a second.
Yeah, and now it's just like for whatever reason. Maybe I wonder if it's tied to like my life has gotten, I guess, a little more serious since I got married. You know, like there's more to lose. Like there's more higher stakes. You know, like I'm basically freelance for the last few months, you know, and it's been going well, but like, you know very well how quickly like freelance can turn into nothing.
So basically I think what you're saying, and let me get this wrong, is while you're smoking weed, the inner stress, your subconscious stress suddenly comes out.
Yeah.
And then because it's suddenly visible that the stress is out, that the anxiety increases. And then when you're sober, your mind is like, wait a second, this exists. So now that this exists, guess what? I'm going to bring it out.
Yeah.
When you're not.
Well, it's almost like conditioning. If I spend 3 hours every night stone having these thoughts, over time, like those thoughts, it's conditioning, right? It's
right.
Like my brain is going to be training itself to have these thoughts even when I'm not. It's like you're changing your brain chemistry.
You're building a system.
Yeah.
Inside your life where it says, hey, at these times of this hour, regardless if you're sober or not, these are the thoughts that I'm going to throw at you.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And I was like, this fucking sucks because it was getting in the way. Like, it was also like, and because of that, it was reducing my bandwidth. And you know, like when you have anxiety or you have depression, it's really hard to do things.
Oh, definitely.
It's really hard to be motivated.
Dude, it is so hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I have manic depression and PTSD.
It's like you already have enough on your plate and now you're like trying to do shit.
Right, you're trying to like push those negative thoughts away, trying to push that anxiety away.
To like edit or whatever it is, you know?
And your brain is a fucking muscle.
Yeah.
So it's burning out as you're trying to get work. So as you're smoking weed or having these negative thoughts, when you are sober, you're getting exhausted every day. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, and I was just like, this is what, at the end of the day, I was like, what am I getting out of this anymore, you know? And also, I'm just like, people say like marijuana, look, I support the legalization of marijuana. I support the decriminalization of marijuana. Nobody should go to jail for marijuana. It is, for the most part, for many people, even for me, like, yeah, we're talking about anxiety. Weed is much safer than alcohol and almost any drug, tobacco. Like it's very safe. And I do support its legalization, but I kind of don't buy this shit about it not being addictive.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's like chemically addictive. Like I haven't smoked weed in like 5 days or whatever. And I've definitely gone through periods in the pandemic where I've taken like a month off or whatever.
Yeah.
But I find myself missing that routine, craving that routine. I think if you don't do something and you can't stop thinking about it, for example, like when I come on this pot, macerating.
Well, it's true, but
true. It's another thing.
It's a system.
It's a system. It's a routine. It's a thing you, and it's all about like I would find myself after this podcast, for whatever reason, after I do anything,
right,
being like, I can't wait to go home and smoke pot.
Oh shit.
And that's like, I don't want to be like
that. Wait, have you thought about replacing this habit? Because, okay, yeah, so for example, oh, really? What are you replacing it with?
Well, lately I've been drinking tea.
It's so simple,
but it's a routine. I put the tea on the pot. I pour the tea. I can have any kind of, it's like going to buy pot at a dispensary. It's like, I can have any kind of tea I want. It smells good.
I love this.
It's soothing. You know, it's what weed did for me. Before, you know, the last few months.
I mean,
you know?
I think it just like goes back to atomic habits where it's you build systems and routines and replace the bad ones with good ones.
Also approaching, I think here's another sign that I was like, I don't think I should do this anymore. I was ending my days saying to myself, I've never said this before, saying to myself before I go to sleep, I don't think I should smoke pot anymore. Okay. I was saying that to myself.
That's good.
But then the next day, at some point, I'd be like, "You should smoke some pot."
It's kind of like someone that's saying, "You know what? I'm going to go to the gym tomorrow."
Yeah, and then you never go to the gym.
You never go to the gym, or it's like, "You know what? Tomorrow, I'm going to stop bringing port into my bed before I go to sleep."
Yeah, yeah.
And then you just never stop doing that.
And I think it's like the switch has been for me is I'm not going to say that to myself the night before. I'm going to wake up and say, you know, this is an AA thing that people say today. I'm not going to smoke pot. And I've been saying that for the last 5 days and it fucking works.
Dude. Okay. So,
and I haven't smoked pot in 5 days and I feel great.
First off, congratulations. Gamblers Anonymous teaches you the same GA. It's basically, hey, when you wake up in the morning, these 24 hours, I'm just not going to do it. You don't think about the next day. You don't think about the week. You just think about the present day.
And
today,
why is that?
I'm not going to do that.
Why is it about just today?
Because if you just focus, it's about being present.
Yeah.
What a lot of people do is they have like these goals and these, you know, like these extensive, long arching progress reports of, I hope to God that I'm going to have the 365 year mark so I can tell everyone that I haven't gambled for 365 days. But that is so arduous.
Yeah.
And then you get overwhelmed, and then pretty soon you go, fuck
that. I need to smoke pot, or I need to drink, or I need to gamble.
Just focus on that one fucking small thing, which is today, I am not going to do this. No, I'm not. I choose not to do that. Because if you say, don't look at the red elephant, you're going to look at the red elephant.
Yeah.
I choose to do something else besides smoking pot. You have a higher probability of accomplishing that task because it's such small.
It's like really, goal. You know, I can't do for one day. I can't smoke pot. It's like, I could do that.
And you know, you have no idea. Then it becomes routine. For example, instead of bringing the laptop to my bed, I take the laptop and I charge it in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Haven't done that lately. I have been going to bed with porn.
Yeah.
But you know, that's like something. But you know what I mean?
But like, I think what's important though about this is like, no one's perfect. You're not going to be perfect. If you're trying to like stop a habit or break a habit, you're not going to be perfect. I think you have to like be forgiving of yourself and then just try again the next day.
You know what they say in Gamblers Anonymous?
Yeah.
The hardest part about Gamblers Anonymous is coming back if you relapse.
Yeah.
And so when someone relapses and then comes into the meeting like, hey guys, I relapsed. Instead of everybody berating them, they go, wow, you're so brave to actually come back because this is the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
Now let's try to figure this out. What did you do wrong that we could help you make sure that you don't do that again? Okay, what systems, what routines, what was the thing?
Yeah, I don't think I'm an addict because I am, it has been pretty easy for me to stop doing a cold turkey. I think I just had to use a little bit of awareness and understanding. And I don't know if I'll not smoke pot again. I kind of doubt I won't. Like I'll probably,
you're going to be at a party.
That's the type of pot smoker I'd like to be.
Yo, let's pass this around.
That's what I would like to be.
And you do that and then that's all of a sudden you like snort heroin, you know?
No, that's too much.
It's like a lead up, you know?
That's very fun to me. That's the type of, of the way I am with drinking is how I'd like to be with pot, which is like I could take it or leave it.
Right.
You know, if it's there, I don't want to do. I think there's something going on if you have to do something like that every single day, or if you're doing that every day, that to me, I don't think that's a good thing. I think that's a kind of a red flag.
I think if you're doing something that's negatively affecting your progress and yes. your own self-improvement, or you're hurting someone due to it,
yeah.
then that's something that I think you should stop.
Because that's what I was noticing, is I was like, having those thoughts were detrimental to my career, to my happiness,
marriage.
To my marriage, to my friendships. So that, I love what you just said. It's fucking beautiful. And I think, crew, please leave with that thought. For me, it was becoming detrimental doing this thing every day. So I got to take a step back and stop.
Gotta take a step back.
Some people smoke pot every day, and they're like, this fucking helps me a lot.
Look at Seth Rogen. He smokes weed every day.
Yeah.
And he has this very successful career.
Yeah, and it doesn't affect him or whatever, you know?
Fuck, dude. I have to think about my porn addiction. Shit. I spend too much time on that.
I mean, how long are you... What is it? 20 minutes? That's the thing about... This is the one thing about porn.
No, it's... Oh. It's about 20 minutes.
That's the thing. That's
I have to search for one particular clip that I want, because I'm a monogamous porn watcher.
Yeah.
There's only like one specific porn clip that I will watch.
Wow.
And I will, because.
That's so funny.
And sometimes they take it off because it's like a special OnlyFans thing.
Yeah.
And so I have to like search, and that takes some time.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm cheating if I'm watching other porn videos.
You're cheating on the videos?
Yeah, because I'm like, yo, I. that's exactly how I feel.
That's ridiculous.
That's why it's all about the monogamous porn watching.
You're like, it's okay if I only do it with one video.
Yes, it's okay if I do it with one video. I'm loyal to this individual.
Yeah.
She's doing her job in this video. I absolutely get pleasure from this video.
What is funny to me about the shame cycle of masturbation is how little it takes. Like I've made myself feel bad about like jerking off, and then I literally will be like, oh wow, that was 3 minutes. I think I could spare it.
I always feel shame after I'm done and I'm just sitting there or laying down.
You're looking at yourself disgusted.
I'm like, why? So, but sometimes I prepare myself. So I take out a sweater or a towel and I get ready.
We all have our vices.
You know,
we really
do. You know what the worst thing is? Okay, so this is my routine. I'm going to tell you my routine with the whole porn thing. By the way, I don't think you're doing it right unless you feel guilty afterwards. Okay, if you don't feel guilty after watching porn, like a little bit of shame... You're definitely doing it wrong.
Okay.
Okay? Because it's like, oh, this is what I want out of life instead of a real human.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, I get it done. And then right after I get it done, I switch to Hulu and I watch the show.
It's so funny how quickly the transition is. Men are disgusting. Like, we will, like, watch, like, some gross porn, and then we'll be like, all right, do you want to watch Abbott Elementary on ABC now? You're like, what the fuck? And then it's like as if that never happened.
You're like watching Wizards of Waverly Place.
Yeah, yeah.
You pause it, you go watch porn, you're done, and then you go back to Wizards
of
Waverly
Place. It is so funny how quick a guy can do that. And like Sid could literally take our dog for a walk, and in that time I could jerk off to the most disgusting thing. Not really that disgusting, but like whatever. MILF meets pool boy.
Stepdad meets stepdaughter.
Yeah. Okay. And then...
Family therapy.
And I'm like...
It's a real thing.
And then she's gone for like 6 minutes. And I'm literally like, pants off, done. Pants back on, watching TV or reading a book.
Right.
And I'm like, how was the walk? And she was like, great. What did you do? And I'm like...
Just watching.
Oh, nothing. But Sid and I have a very... My wife and I have a very... We're accepting of that,
you know,
of that sort of behavior.
Sometimes, not sometimes, but I would often like order an Uber,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, how fast can I go before
that's
the
so
Uber
funny.
Arrives? And I'm like, that's I don't want to miss this. Like, 18
well,
minutes.
Men are really horny. I think that's why it's like
men are horny.
Men are horny, so it's like, you know, I think if you have a partner or if you're single, like, I think it's not a bad idea to like. If you have an urge, like, do it in the privacy of your home. Like, that's what it's there for. Like, that's...
Bathroom time.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, otherwise you don't do it, and, like, that can lead to a lot of bad shit, you know?
Wait, so you're saying, like, without the release of the tension... Sometimes you just can't think. You can't think until you ejaculate.
Totally. Like,
it's like, I got to write this thing.
Totally. Like, if I wake up in the morning and, like, I'm horny and my wife doesn't want to have sex, it's like, I can't go on with my day if I don't do it. So, like, why am I being so hard on myself about it?
But sometimes I have to plan it, right? So I have to think to myself, if I wake up with the heart on. By the way, I sleep half naked.
Uh-huh.
I wear a shirt and my pants are gone.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Jonathan.
That's how I sleep.
I sleep with underwear and no shirt or no pants. No.
I wear shirt.
Why do you do that?
I'm half.
That is hilarious, dude.
Because
you're like a little poo bear when you sleep.
Exactly. That's exactly.
That's so funny.
Because I would wake up and, like, I feel like a restriction. I'm not saying my thing is like 10 inches, right? Yeah. I'm not like, oh my God. I'm just saying, like, it gets a little uncomfortable. And there's something about just the freedom there. But if I do wake up and it's there, I always have to think, okay, in 3 hours, I'm going to be exhausted.
Yeah.
And sometimes if I have a busy day, I'm like, okay, I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes I put in my, you know, I have a checklist sometimes. Maybe I'll put like masturbation. I'll schedule it.
Yeah.
Schedule.
So yeah, I feel good.
Wait, I have a question. So now that you're done smoking weed.
Not done. Just not doing it today.
Do you feel more?
And tomorrow.
Are you feeling productive? By the way, I want to let you know that. So when you take medication, like I take Lamotrigine every single day, it takes 14 days for everything to be like flushed out. So maybe, and this is just a theory, you smoking weed, even though you're quote unquote sober, there's some remnants of it still in your system.
Totally, I'm sure there
for
is.
For at least 14 days, and so that could be like creeping up.
Yeah. So what's the question? How do I feel?
Yeah, how do you feel?
I feel really good. I feel like I have been more productive. I feel like my bandwidth has already increased. Like,
how many days has it been?
It's been 5 days. Okay. And I've always felt this, like when I take breaks, like I'm like, I'm so much more productive. I have more bandwidth. I can handle more. I can do more. You know, like there would be times, like I said, I'd just be like stoned. I'm like, I can't even deal with that.
Let's do an accountability thing.
Yeah.
Next week, I'm going to be like, yo, how far are you in?
Okay.
Like, and I will do a porn thing.
Okay.
Deal.
All right, cool. I love this.
This is great.
Yeah. Crew,
can
I ask the crew? Guys, what do you guys think? Do you think weed's addictive or... Let us know. Yeah. Anyways, I had my first in-person audition since for 2.5 years.
You're actually going to audition.
Right before this, I went to my first in-person audition in 2.5 years.
I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I missed those.
I missed it too.
Fucking turning on your goddamn camera.
It's so lame.
And then sending your best take in.
Yeah.
And then when they do a callback, you're on Zoom and you're like,
let's explain this process to the crew.
Okay, you explain it.
So since COVID, actors will send, they'll do self-tapes, which is like you get an audition, you get side, so you get like a couple pages from a script to audition for a particular character.
That is true.
You shoot it yourself, much like we're doing here, and maybe you have a reader, so a friend of yours who can read it for you.
Say I never had a reader.
Yeah, and then you shoot it yourself, and then you send it in, and it is very much like, I don't know. Is anyone ever going to fucking watch this?
What's really cool. Okay, so this is what
happens. And you don't get that feeling of performing, which I think actors need. They want to feel like they're performing for someone.
Right. And so within in-person auditions, how it goes is you get the email. Your agent says, hey, at 2 p.m., you have to go to this location. You go to the location and you arrive. And there's about like 30, 40 people that look exactly kind of like you.
Yeah, it's very funny.
You're like, oh my God. So they think I look like this balding dude?
Oh yeah, it could be various.
And we're all wearing the same outfits in some sort of way. And then you get, you sign in, and then they usually give you like these scripts that you look and you kind of have to memorize.
And the scripts, like commercials, this is particularly for commercials.
Yeah, commercials.
Don't you find commercial scripts to be so confusing?
Right?
Like, why don't they just look like regular scripts?
Because
I can understand. But
it's basically just a description. It goes, man looks surprised. Man sees fish.
Yeah.
Fish moves. Man looks shocked. And then sometimes there's like a couple lines. Man says this, and it's scattered. It's not formatted.
We should show them like some sort of like formatting for a script because it is chaos. You're like, this is hurting my eyes. I don't understand what the order of this is.
So you walk in, and everyone has like a partner, usually, And then you sit down and then there's a director and he tells you what to do. Now, if everything's kind of like going well,
yeah,
they'll keep on can you do that again, but less?
Yeah.
They don't, or can you do that again?
That's a good sign.
But more. I think if you do it like 7 or 8 times because they're trying to get a level of who you are, if you can act. Like when I got my audition, they just sat down. I sat down. By the way, I always fuck up. I'll tell you something. I'll tell you an audition story. But anyway, I sat down and I have to look at these photos.
Yeah.
And as I'm looking at these photos, they go, okay, you're looking at it. And they go, sad. And you're like, happy. And they're just looking at your eyes the entire time. And then you say the line like, quiet it down. More quiet it down.
Yeah.
And if that's happening and you're paying attention and they have like, and they keep on doing the repeating, to me, that's a very good sign. But what you do, so this is what happens usually. And you've been there.
Yeah, I love this. I love hearing
this. You leave the audition, and as you're leaving, you always hear other actors go, yeah, they made me do like 4 or 5 times. And you know, that's like a good sign, right? Right? Or or they're trying to like get good feedback. Like, yeah, when did he do the sad thing with you? Like, how did you do? But they're really just doing that as like a competitive edge.
Yeah.
Like, hey, guess what? Guess how many takes I did with the director? Yeah. And it's like rolling my fucking eyes.
Yeah.
The key is you just grind in silence. You just leave and you're like, ah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I left today and I said break legs to everyone else. I was like, break legs, guys.
But secretly, like, fuck you.
No, I don't give a shit. If the right person will get the job, you know?
Okay, well, that's good for you. Yeah. You're humble. But, me, it's always competitive. It's like, I really hope I get this.
Yeah. No, but yeah, it was cool. I just loved getting to go in and like perform for someone, you know, for a second. It was fun. But I am always disappointed by the audition for a commercial because it's always so slight. Like, for example, it'll be like, okay, we want you to pretend to lift the box. Can you, and action. Okay, cut. Thank you. Next.
Yeah, it's true.
And you're just like, what? How could you tell that I could do this from that?
In one audition, they're like, I want you to pretend that you're in swimming suits. Now jump. And we're like jumping. And I'm like, this is so fucking weird.
Sometimes I'm just like, are you guys fucking with us? Like, is this how like the man is just like, he's at home watching these fucking auditions being like, look at that idiot jump. He doesn't even know what it's for.
Before I like, we move on to another subject. If people are watching and they go, hey, how do you get an agent or commercial agent? Everyone's different, but this is how I did it. Yeah. So when I arrived in 2018, I took some acting classes. And then 2019, I'm like, okay, I think it's time for me to get an agent. And what I did, and this is something that you could try out, is I went to IMDb Pro and I paid for a subscription. And then I went down and I searched like all these different actors and I kept on scrolling and I found like a bunch of agents and their emails to certain agencies.
Yeah.
And I put down like maybe like 50 agents. And then what I did was I made a reel and then I individually emailed every single agent, but my subject line was my type.
Yeah.
I don't go like, hi,
that's looking so smart.
I don't say like, hi, I'm looking for representation. Instead, it's just mine was,
damn, that's smart.
20 something. New Filipino American actor.
Yeah.
In like all capital
that's
letters.
That's so smart. Explain to them why that's smart.
Because what agents are looking for, they get thousands of emails every single day. But what they're looking for is they're looking for specific types. Because in their roster, maybe they're missing a Filipino or American. Maybe they're missing a 20-something Jewish individual. Maybe they're missing an action star. So it's like 20-something action star, 20-something white nerd, 20-something tech, 30-something. So mine was 20-something Filipino-American.
I'm rubber, new in town.
Just actor. That's it. And then it's the person like, hey, Tatiana.
Yeah.
I redo the type.
Yeah.
And I go, my experience is like the three quick experiences. Like I have 3 viral videos with 1 million views. Here's my reel. If you're interested, talk soon.
Yeah.
Literally 2 lines. Send that to 50 people.
Yeah.
And then some people would respond like,
oh. See, I would have made the mistake of writing like a whole bio.
No.
You're so smart.
Fuck the hot. Oh, well, I come from marketing. But yeah, I got really.
Because they're just like, I need the bit. I just.
Right. I got to figure out what my roster is.
Yeah.
And so some of them said, hey, my roster's full, or you need more experience, blah, 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 blah. And then one person said, hey, can you come in? So I came in and I wore this like super colorful shirt with like a collar. And the agent looked at me up and down and she's like, what are you wearing? This is not something that a 20 something would wear. Please wear like what your reel is with a baggy sweater. Come back. And I was like, I don't even. So I had to come back a week later.
Oh my God.
And I wore the baggy sweater and she's like, okay, here are some lines. I want you to read them and I want to see. And I'm like, fuck. So I read the lines, I did it. And she's like, okay, I can work with this. Do you have any representation right now? I'm like, no. She's like, okay, just sign right here. This is our thing. And give me your email and we will send you auditions.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened in 2019. And then, I started getting auditions. And the first one, I walked in, I remember. And the line was, hey, can you put your water down? And then he responds like, no, I will not. Huh. And then you drink the water.
Yeah.
And I kept on going, hey, please put the water down. He's like, no. It's, hey, can you put the water down? And then right in the third take, I take the glass and I spill it all over the table. And the guy goes, okay, cool. We'll do that again. I'm like, okay. And I take the glass, he cleans it up. And he's like, no. We'll do that again. We're going to have a person.
Oh, man.
And I was like, oh, I guess I didn't get it. And then that.
It does feel like sometimes when you're going in there that you just, for whatever reason, you did not understand, you know, what they were going for.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating because you're reading, you know, you can read and you can understand language. And you're like, how did I miss it? How did I miss this? It's like a puzzle.
Right. And you're over.
It's like a little riddle, you know, and you're like, oh,
but it's just like your type. And that helps a lot. So
it is so much of like, as soon as you walk in there, they know yes or no. Well, they know like, okay, he may work, but they definitely know you won't work.
Exactly.
Just based on how you look.
Right. So like try to follow the description. Which is fucked up, but it's like really good because now you know what type of photos to take. So, I'm just going to tell this one so we can like move on.
No,
but there's this. So what helped me? So in 2019, I'm like, fuck, what am I doing wrong? I went to like maybe 3 or 4 auditions. And getting audition is a good thing.
Yeah, because they have to. That process is the audition. The agent sends in your headshot, maybe your reel. Usually in commercials, just a headshot.
Just a headshot.
Because it's a lot about how you look. And then the casting agent says, "I want to see him."
Right. So to me, it's like there's a lot of luck involved. But anyway, so what really helped was in the end of 2019, around like October, I took a class with Leslie Kahn.
Oh, yeah. I did Leslie Kahn.
Oh, she's amazing.
Yeah, she's great.
She is rude as fuck. She makes people cry, but that's when you know she's good. Anyway, and she has a good proven record.
I didn't know you took
record.
Leslie.
Yeah, because one of my friends told me to, and he like acts in movies, and he's a cool guy. And anyway, so I go in, and one of the first assignments, you know this when you take Leslie Kahn, is what they do is before the class, like before you even introduce yourself to anybody in the class, what Leslie Kahn does is they put a chair in the middle of the room. And so your back is facing the class. So you stand up, you look at everybody left to right, you do a little smile, then you close the smile, you do a little bowish, or whatever action you want to do, which I did a little ballet, and then you sit down in the chair. And then as soon as you sit down on the chair, everybody in the room starts throwing what type of person they think you are. And so they're like, for me, it's like, oh, this is the best friend. This is the guy that can never get the girl. This is like the gay friendly dude. What else did I get? I got like, this was like, the bully who never grew up. I think I got like, this is the tech guy. This is the nerd. This is the hacker.
Yeah.
And so you're just like
fucking racist.
But that's really good.
No, but it is.
Yeah, but it's like really good because then what ends up happening is it's like, okay, I know my type and not everyone can be the lead, which is cool. Like the whatever. And now that you know your type, you want to like double down on it because at the end of the day, what do you want? You just want work. And then through the work, so that helps so much.
Yeah, it is like, because otherwise you're kind of like flying blind.
Right.
You know, you're like, and then you're like, you really want to execute at a high level for the things that you're right for.
Right. You can't be like, also, like, you can't be like, not everyone's going to be Tom Holland. So now that I knew my type, change my headshots to like the best friend look or whatever the fuck. And then in November or just December of 2019, I went in for an audition. And like, since I've been like practicing kind of that type, mm-hmm. boom,
you booked it.
I booked a commercial.
Yeah.
Fucking Credit Karma. It was fucking dope.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic hit and then I just didn't go to on any auditions. I did a couple for like Zoom.
Yeah.
So my agent's like really mad. I think she's going to drop me. But anyway.
Yeah.
So that's,
that was interesting.
So what's your type, do you think?
I think, like Boy Next Door. Mm. I think, neurotic. Jewish guy. I think I'm like friend.
This is kind of cool. Maybe you should do that. Like go to a bunch of strangers and turn your back around and like tell me what you think I am.
Yeah. Well, that's what, yeah, I did the same thing in Leslie's class. They said that's what they would say about me.
That's what they said about you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, good for you, dude.
Yeah,
the
it was
Jew
cool.
best friend.
Yeah, Jewish.
Did they knew that you were Jewish just based on your hair?
I guess. Or yeah, just like nice guy, or the guy who doesn't get the girl, but then he does, or the guy who never gets the girl. You know, kind of similar to you.
Yeah.
Kind of like beta, like a beta male.
Dude, sometimes it hurts. Like sometimes the comments are you're like, fuck, am I really like this guy?
But yeah, I think to be an actor, I think to do anything creative, you have to kind of drop your ego. Cause it is. People are just gonna see you how they want to see you, and they're gonna be like, you know, what would be so bad if I had a part and I brought you in for the hacker, and I'm gonna pay you a lot of money, and I'm gonna write you as a real person, and but you're gonna be the hacker.
And so Leslie Kahn would go like, she would say, if you think about it, like I know everyone wants to be Brad Pitt, but think about it, Brad Pitt, his type was like a Western dude or whatever. I think it was like a Western
yeah.
dude.
Yeah.
For so many years, yeah. and then suddenly he could change whatever he wanted.
Yeah, he could do whatever he wanted, but you have to do those things. And like, you know, in that acting class, Leslie's class, she'll be like, you'll get a co-star, and for the crew that doesn't know, a co-star is like a 3-line max part
right.
in something. And a lot of people will book those, and they'll be like, especially if they're like theater trained or very well trained actors, they'll be like, what's my character with these 3 lines? Who am I? You know? And it's like, dude, you're a fucking barista. Shut the fuck up. Think about what a barista is and be a fucking barista.
It helps so much. Like, okay.
You're not a barista who's also a fucking painter, okay?
So, you know I direct digital commercials.
Yeah.
And so that's what I would tell the actors. I'd be yeah. like, hey, listen, here are the lines.
I know you're more talented than these lines.
Yes, but I just want you to think. I want you to just think this. Just think this. I'm a barista. Or like, I'm sad, go.
Yeah, because if the line is like, welcome to Starbucks, what can I get you? You know, you want the writer, the director, they need you to fucking sell, welcome to Starbucks, what can I get you? This is a Starbucks. They don't want this. Welcome to Starbucks. What can I get you?
Ugh. Don't make it your own.
Yeah, you're like, what the fuck? This scene is like a whole different thing now.
I love it. It's called character thoughts.
Character. It is like acting is the most fucking fascinating thing. It's so
God, I want to get back
beautiful.
Back into it.
Yeah,
fuck,
let's shoot some self tapes just cause.
Sketch. Oh yeah, self tapes.
Yeah, let's just cause.
Hi. Greg Santos has the best. I'm Greg. I'm 5'7", and then he does like a slate shot. So it's like there's like a dog or something funny.
Anyway,
so
I've been boxing.
You've been boxing?
Yeah, yeah. You box, but
is this for acting?
No, I just like I don't know if you feel like that felt like this, but I think for most of my 20s I just like didn't exercise. Like I just didn't
The skinny fat.
Yeah, I just like did. I mean, I'm very lucky. I have good genes. Like I always ate pretty well and I would exercise occasionally, but like when I was like in high school, I worked out a lot.
Right.
And I was a varsity basketball player and like I trained a lot and I really exercised a lot. And then in my 20s, I think because I pushed it so hard in my like teens or whatever, I was just like, I want to be lazy. So I didn't exercise. And then turning 30, I'm like, I can't go on like this. I'm going to fucking die by fucking 55. So
I think the worst is when you see an old elderly man.
Yeah, and they can't really walk.
And they have like a hump.
Yeah.
Every time that that's happens, I straighten my back, and then if I'm with someone, I'm like, I don't want to be like that.
I know. I want to be strong. Like my dad,
and
like
my brother's like, why are you saying that out loud? I'm like, don't worry. Not only does he have a hump, he probably can't hear me.
Yeah. Don't worry. Like I love how my dad can, like, he can run, he can play basketball still, he's 65, like he's in good shape. Like I want to be like that. I want to be active, because I'm probably, if I do have kids, I'll probably be an older dad. So I really want to, you know, well into my 80s, be kind of fit. Like I can play catch with my son or my daughter.
So you're boxing now?
So I'm boxing.
Boom, 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 bang.
Well, boxing, I'm also doing like weightlifting. It's kind of like all in one thing. And I think we've talked about this. I had a gym membership, but I would like sometimes go, but I would barely do anything. Yeah. And the gym membership was like so cheap.
Yeah.
It was $30 a month. Now I'm paying that, maybe that a little bit more per session. So I'm investing money into it. I'm holding myself accountable.
I'm glad you are.
And it's fucking working, man. And I am like loving that hour I have to just focus on myself. No comedy, no podcasting, no career. All this is about is working my ass off and getting healthy.
Well, so it's endorphins. It's
endorphins.
Endorphins is a drug.
Is a drug. Yeah, and that drug, I'd love to be addicted to that.
So you do that 3 times a
week? I'd
love
to be addicted to that shit.
You know what I'm saying?
But okay, so I've been boxed. So we do, instead of like running cardio, we box. That's how my trainer boxes.
You do with your wife, I'm guessing?
Yes, it does it too.
Do you ever hit her in the face?
No.
Is this your time to be a domestic violent husband been wanting to punch her?
Of course
consistently?
Not.
Okay.
No. But
hey, some people have their thing. If you want to hit your wife, you want to hit your wife. That's the time to hit your wife.
Yeah.
I'm not endorsing domestic violence.
But
I'm going to get canceled.
But so what's cool about boxing is I've been doing it for like 3 weeks. I didn't realize, you know, and it's my trainer being like 1-2, 1-2-3, 1-2-3-4. And it's like, he's calling out all the punches. And sometimes I'm like, it's like a puzzle in my head. It's like, you know, it's kind of like you're patting your head and rubbing your belly. Like your brain's sort of like, wait, what? And I never realized how intelligent you have to be
a boxer
or a boxer. You really have to be smart.
It's a chess game, baby.
Yeah, it's a chess game. So it's like, and the other thing that it made me think of was, you have to be smart to be a boxer. You have to be really smart to be a professional boxer. And then unfortunately, a lot of these professional boxers end up destroying their brains.
Yes.
Because of how good they got at boxing.
So they become really intelligent and then really dumb at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're still smart, but like they're getting hit in the head so much that, you know, CTE, that's going to cause damage.
So do you wear like a helmet when you box?
No, but I don't get hit in the head.
No one takes a baseball bat and hits you in the head at all?
Yeah, no. What?
What? Oh, baseball bat? Oh, no.
Yeah. But it's like,
speaking about baseball bats, my father just hit me with a golf club once. Anyway, go on.
Oh, my God. Well, we need to talk about that off the podcast.
It's so funny.
But that is, I don't know, it's been so cool to see me get better at it and how it is feels like it's making me smarter.
What's your favorite move right now?
I love a little hook.
A little hook. So
like a right hook.
So what's your strategy there? So is it jab, jab, hook?
Yeah. I mean,
like what is it?
We haven't really talked strategy, but just like, I also like how much, I just never realized how much of boxing, it's really a full workout.
Yeah, you're using your hips.
It's hips, core, chest, you know, like.
By the way, I used to box, but I don't box anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But also what's cool to me is I've gotten in a fight before, but I was very like all over the place.
Yes.
But now in just a few lessons, I'm not saying I'm a fighter now, but I do feel like, because I'm learning these fundamentals, if now I happen to get into a fight.
Right, you can defend yourself and your wife and your family.
A little bit better.
Right.
And what's cool about boxing too.
I use my mouth.
Yeah,
you know.
You talk shit.
No, to defuse the situation.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, yo.
Well, that's what I try to do, yeah. But what's cool about boxing is like, you don't have to be, if you're in a street fight.
Yes.
Not with a boxer.
Yes.
You don't have to be this like fast, hard, throwing hard blows to win a street fight. Like the guy who's like contained, balanced, throwing, strong enough with good form hits, usually wins.
That is true.
You know, you would think the guy who's throwing faster punches and, but a lot of times that throws you off balance and then you leave yourself open.
It kind of reminds me of when I did Kung Fu, which is kind of the same thing.
I didn't know you do Kung Fu.
I did.
I do Kung Fu.
So I did Kung Fu from the age of 14 to 17.
Yeah.
And every single like 6 months, they do a little test where you have to do like a form. And then after that, either you have to spar someone.
Yeah.
But as you get towards the belt, one of the highest sashes that you can get is red. And right before that is blue. And so from red to blue, there is this test where after you do your form, it's like a presentation, like you do a flip, you have to fight three people.
Yeah.
It's called Choi Li Foot Kung Fu. And I would fail every single time because you're absolutely right. The guy, so there's one fight. His name was Danny, and Danny was like superb. And he always had this like special like little like roundhouse kick. So I would go up and I would do my very best to be static. And as he would like try to pull his roundhouse kick, I would like take my knee to block it.
Yeah.
But that motherfucker, Danny motherfucker, he would just stay still and he would wait. He would like laser focus until I would make a mistake. And what he did was, I don't know why I would fall for this trick all the time. But he would pretend to like bring his left leg up for like a roundhouse. And so then I would lift up, you know, my right leg to block the kick. But as soon as I would come up, because now like I'm all like focused on the right, he would just take his fucking right foot and just smack my body as hard as he could on the left side.
Yeah.
And then I would fall back and I'd be like, God damn it, Danny.
Yeah.
And he would get like a point.
And it's like,
he's so good.
It's so cool. And I appreciate.
Have to be like, anyway, you appreciate.
No, I just appreciate fighters because something that I strive to do just in my life is like prepare. And like boxers, fighters, even athletes, you know, they're so good at what they do. And we wonder like, how do they do that? How do they know to dodge that way? How are they able to think that quickly? It's because they've done it. It's literally downloaded into their brain. They've done it so many times that they're not even thinking. It just is, you know, it's just there. They just know in their body. They know, oh, if I'm going to, you know, dodge a punch.
I have to go left. I have to go right.
Yeah. It's like,
it's a vibe. It's a feeling.
Yeah. It's not even like they're not thinking.
So the next time you get in a fight with your wife and she's about to punch you, you know exactly how to block it.
Yeah. I just give her a hug and a kiss.
You just give her a hug and a kiss.
I say, let's not fight, baby.
That'd be really cool, though. Like, one day, like, you have to box your wife.
I don't want to box her. I would just let her win.
I have a question. Now that you're getting into this, you know, the boxing realm, do you kind of crave, like, hopefully as you're walking down the street with your wife and someone's...
So I have to fight someone?
Yeah, somebody's like, hey, what's up, baby? And you're like, yo, she's taking... Oh, you want to get in a fight? Like, rips off a shirt. He's like, let's go.
No.
And you're like, wife, I got this.
I really don't want... I don't want to do that. I don't want to... I honestly think my wife would hate that. I think she would... So when we were going to Mexico City for our, like, mini moon...
You had to fight the cartel?
No, but she said, like, hey, when we're there, I just want to be clear, if I get kidnapped, I want you to let them take me. Do not come after me. Do not fight in my honor. Let them take me and then call my dad and you guys figure out a plan of attack.
Oh, like pay them off?
Yeah, or pay them off or call, you know, like call the feds or call the FBI. Like, don't try to save me in that moment because they will kill you.
Don't be like Liam Neeson.
Yeah, don't try to like, don't go rogue and vigilante.
He's kind of looking at you like, I know you're weak.
Yeah.
And I know that you will fail trying to use violence to protect me.
The only fight I ever got into was, the only fight I ever got into was during a basketball game. It's hard to even call it a fight.
Mm-hmm.
So we were in a game. I was guarding this guy. It's varsity basketball. Ever heard of it? I'm guarding this guy, and when I played basketball, I was a very annoying defender. Yes. I liked staring at my. I would stare at the offensive player that I was guarding. I would just stare at them.
That's kind of hot.
And people hated it.
Yeah.
You know, they would not. I would just wherever they went. I'm looking at. And, you know, usually you're like trying to look at the ball. And then, but I was pretty good at looking at both, but I would really try to stare at them because I knew it makes people uncomfortable,
yes.
know? And this one particular player, like, really didn't like it. He was getting really annoyed at me, and he called me a kike. And I didn't like that. That's a very derogatory word for a Jewish person.
That's right, you're Jewish.
Yeah, and I didn't like that. So the, there was a loose, the next play, there was a loose ball on the ground, and the guy I was guarding dove for it. So then I also dove for it, but I like led as I was, I like led with my fist.
Yes.
And I knocked him in the face.
Oh my God.
Like I fell into him in the face. So I thought I was being clever. Like I thought the refs wouldn't notice it. Cause it was like, you can't call me a kike and I'm just going to take that.
Right.
Especially in a, like maybe if we were walking on the street, I would be like, all right, whatever. I'm not wasting my time.
And then
this,
what happened?
Like,
did he?
And then I got technical. I think I got ejected from the game.
Did he retaliate?
He was like, what? He was like, are you kidding me? This guy punched me in the face. And then I told the ref, he called me a kike. And the ref was like, he like did not know how to handle it. So I got kicked out of the game because the ref didn't see or hear him call me that. So he only saw me retaliate. So obviously I'm the only one who's getting in trouble.
Yeah.
And then I told my dad after, because my dad was like, he was a little mad because.
But then you're like, Dad, he called me a kike.
And he was like, all right.
All right.
He was like, you know.
He deserves it.
He's like, not my favorite thing, but somewhat justified.
Man, you and your fights. Yeah, I'm trying to like, I've erased a lot of my life from the underage of 18. But I do remember when I was like 20.
Yeah.
I was in Oakland.
Uh-huh.
And there's two things that happened, but it doesn't matter. I mean, one, I was walking with my cell phone and some kids swiped it and they were playing like Monkey in the Middle as I was chasing it. But that wasn't like really a fight until I finally caught it. But it was like late at night and a bunch of, a group of individuals were walking and I was like, oh no, I'm definitely going to probably get hurt here. But
you know what?
So I'm a good empath, but I'm like, you know what? I am brave.
Yeah.
I am strong.
Yeah.
I'm not going to move. I'm not going to walk on the other side of the sidewalk.
Yeah.
I'm going to show that these people are good people.
Yeah.
And as I'm going through, this guy, one of the guys, there's four of them, takes his fist and just hits me on the side of the face.
Oh, man.
But thank Jesus Christ himself, I guess you could say. So as I got hit, it hit my glasses and my glasses flew. And as I stumbled, I just looked at him like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Sorry, we good? And then he's like, yeah. And I'm like, cool.
You said that to him?
Yeah, because I was like, sorry, we're good? Because, you know, some people, they get angry.
Yeah.
And what they really want to do is they want to find another person that's aggressive. And I don't know. Maybe because living with an abuser like my father, who would like throw golf balls and get angry and choke you and stuff, which is like hilarious.
It's not hilarious.
Yeah. It's not good. But anyway, the way that I would always diffuse my dad was like saying like a joke.
Yeah.
Or like, whoa, you good? Like, we're fine.
Yeah.
But if you say like calm down or if you cry.
Yeah, you're meeting with them more aggression.
Right, for some reason. Conflict. They want to power you.
Yeah. So even I'm not a violent person, but like even if I'm angry and someone says to calm down, I mean, it's like an anger management with Adam Sandler. Like nobody can, it's impossible to handle that.
If you want to piss off somebody, like if you want to like really piss off anybody, you just go, yeah, dude, I know you're a little angry.
Yeah. No, a little angry.
Yeah.
No, I'm very angry.
Or you go like, dude, I know, just calm down.
Yeah.
Dude,
oh my God.
It's my favorite thing just to piss somebody off. Yeah. Like, if I wanted to.
Yeah.
If I want to use that tactic. Yeah. But no, but like, whoa, sorry, we good? Okay, cool. Oh, thank God. And then you just walk away.
Yeah, yeah.
But
so funny. So crazy.
What about the dog? So no, you were telling me before earlier about a dog. What happened?
So my friend told me this story that his like childhood dog had some cancer on her back leg.
Holy shit.
Yeah, which
dude.
Is sad. And they had scheduled a surgery for the dog. And it was like, you know, very doable surgery. The cancer wasn't spreading to any part of the body. Like, seemed like it would be taken care of with just a very simple surgery. So they had the surgery scheduled. And then the doctor called, the nurse called, or the doctor's office called, really, and said, sorry, there's a scheduling conflict. We have to reschedule this surgery for 3 months from now.
Mm.
And my friend and I were talking and, you know, he's just like, oh, now what could have been a fixable issue could become a very serious issue.
Yeah.
All because of a scheduling conflict.
Interesting.
And I feel like that happens so often with humans as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know with my own, my grandma, my mom's mom, she missed like a doctor's appointment.
Oh no.
You know, to go do something where they were going to check on something that they were slightly concerned about. She missed it. A certain amount of time went by, and then that problem became serious.
Wow.
So it's just so crazy to me.
How a little thing can turn into
a big
thing.
Like something that has nothing to do with medicine, that's just pure logistics and coordination, could be life or death.
It's like at any moment, one little misstep, you could get killed.
Yeah. Like,
For example, like, see these wires on the side?
Yeah.
Jonathan
has wires on the side of this desk.
I would walk in this and I trip.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, if I trip a little too far, I'm fucking paralyzed.
Dead. It's so, like, that's why you have to be so grateful for your health, or like the fact that you wake up and walk to the bathroom and don't trip and break your neck.
Dude,
and die.
Dude, just to be alive and walking this way and also having like no warts on your fingers.
Yeah.
Is a miracle within itself.
I'm just like, how often do you think that happens where like, someone has to like get a surgery done and like the office is like, sorry, doctor's going to Aruba.
And then you're dead.
And then you're going to die.
I mean, you don't know this. There's this kid who's like 19 years old. I forget his name, but basically he was dared by his friends to eat like this worm that was on the ground. He ate it not knowing that it had parasites inside of it. And literally in 2 weeks.
Dead.
It's like just tiny.
These tiny things.
Little things. I'm thinking,
like, life is so precious.
So I'm thinking about this time, and I've already said it on the podcast once, but I'll talk about it right now. Is there was a moment in 2017 in February where I was driving for Lyft, and as I was driving late at night, it was around 7 p.m. It was dark. I was driving on the
That's
5.
That's not that late.
But yeah, but it's dark. It's San Francisco. Dark, yeah. It's like the 580. San Francisco, and there's this moment while I'm driving where, as I'm driving home, the car goes down into this little pivot, and there's just a few seconds of a blind spot as you go up.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'm on lane number 5, and lane number 5 is right near the exit.
Yeah.
So as I'm going down and coming up, all of a sudden, in front of my eyes, another car that's in front of me suddenly swerves to the left really high. And I don't know where this came from. I don't know if it's God. I don't know if someone's watching over me. I don't know. Yeah. But your subconscious mind, as soon as it sees that, goes, go left, go left, go left. And for some reason, I did swerve to the left just in the nick of time that I hit the car in front of me. And so what was happening was right in front of me, there was like this metal Jeep with blinkers on lane number 5, and another car in front of it. I hit that car so hard that my car like swerves. And I just, it was like Saving Private Ryan, like glass breaking.
Yeah. Oh man.
Things are flying. I land perpendicular to the road. My head's bleeding. My leg is bleeding. Fucking cars are headed towards me, and they're pausing. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. And suddenly there's like a knock on the window, like doosh, 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 doosh. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I open the glasses falling. She's like, help me. My girlfriend's underneath the car. And so what happened was, as I hit the Jeep, there's another car in front of it. And it just so happened to be that the passenger in the Jeep was outside of her car. So when I hit the Jeep, it hits the car in front of it, and the car starts spinning. But because the person's outside, she gets hit by that spinning car, and she flies and hits the wall, and the car spins and lands on top of her.
Oh, man.
So here I am.
She's alive, though?
I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
And the woman's like, help me, my girlfriend's underneath the car. I start running, and I see the woman underneath the car, and she's just coughing, and like I could see blood coming out of her mouth.
Oh my God, this is so horrible.
And I'm bleeding, and I'm like, what's happening? What's happening? And it just like hits. It like hits me because I look at the Jeep, and the Jeep is like not that destroyed because it's metal.
Mm-hmm.
That car is broken, and I see in the back of the Jeep two car seats. And the woman who like knocked on my door finally like picks up her kid, and the kid is like not knowing what's really happening until she sees the woman underneath the car, and then she begins to cry. Like, oh my God, so screaming the woman's name, oh my God. And then the girl who knocked on my door finally like realizes everything, starts screaming in my ear, like, look what you did. A lot of things are happening at that moment. I'm fucking breaking down. The cops come, we move the car, they start pulling her out. I go to the firefighter and I'm like, yo, is she okay right now? If I ever does, yes, she's alive. I'm like, okay, let's do a prayer. So we pray. And I'm wiping the blood off. And then the firefighter's like, hey, you wanna go to the hospital? Wanna figure this out? I'm like, no, I don't have health insurance. I'm just gonna stay here. I feel totally fine. And then the woman that was the other woman, remember there's two cars. Mm-hmm. So the first car that had the spinning thing.
Yeah.
She's like totally fine, but when the cops arrive, she goes, ow, my back.
Yeah.
And she gets into the ambulance and drives off. And I'm here like, fuck, oh my God, what's going on? Because the woman under the car is to the hospital. I'm alone. And then the police officer gets my name, gets everything. We get back in the car. He drives me home. I arrive home. I tell my housemates. I'm like, they're like, why are you late? I'm like, oh, I got into a
And you're bleeding from your head?
No. Right now, yeah. I'm just like, I wiped it off. And I go to my roommates. I'm like, oh, got into a major car accident. And because my life is like all over the place, they don't know how to react. They just go, I'm so sorry. And they just like continue playing video games.
Yeah. So did you have to go to the hospital or?
I get in the shower. I cry. And as I'm crying, blood just goes all over the shower. And of course, you know, a few weeks later, I get sued for like $1 million.
For the accident?
Yeah, for the accident. I get sued for $1 million. And, but what I'm getting at is that when they did the reports and everything, they go, wow, if you did not turn left, just a few like fucking inches, your trajectory would be like head on collision. And there's a big percentage that you wouldn't be here today.
You would have died.
But what's crazy too is if the woman that was outside of her passenger seat was just a few inches away, she would have, instead of flying to the wall, just been dragged underneath the car and she would have died. And it's really wild that we're just living off of tiny little inches.
What's interesting about that,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, is like, because of the way you hit, I guess obviously in an ideal situation, this never happens.
Right.
But because of the way you hit her, you saved yourself and this woman.
Right.
Like, sure, I'm sure there was a traumatic injury. She had to go to the hospital. Like,
she broke her femur.
Yeah. But
no scars on the face.
But she lived and you lived. That's crazy.
I was really fortunate in the fact that like as I was driving for Lyft and everything, and as I called like right away that same day, I like documented everything. I listed everything. And then when the lawsuit arrived, their lawyers gave me a call.
Lyft or the other people?
The other people. Yeah. And they're like, hey, we're not really here to sue you. I can finally talk about it. They're not really here to sue you. They're here to get money from Lyft and the rental company Hertz.
Yeah.
So we're suing Lyft for $1 million. We're suing Hertz for $1 million. And we're suing you for $1 million. And I was, of course, stressed out because good thing I took photos. Good thing I listed everything. It was like I was planning. Like, it's like I committed murder, but thankfully I had everything fucking aligned.
Yeah, well, you did. I mean, it was an accident.
Yeah. And so they had private investigators on me for like a whole year, but thank God they got nothing. And then finally, during the deposition, Hertz gave me a lawyer. And they go, okay, listen. Just be very careful because...
Wait, so you were driving a Hertz car for Lyft?
Oh, yeah, for Lyft, yeah. Got it. You can rent a car. And so I... In the deposition... The depositions are so fucking weird.
Yeah.
Because what the other side of the lawyer is trying to do is they're trying to, as much as they can, discredit you that you were unfit as, like, not just as a driver, but as a person.
Yeah.
Because if you're a bad person, it's like... Bad person equals also a reckless driver.
Yeah.
And so they would go to me and they would go, what's your prescription on your glasses? And I'm like, this. were you wearing them? Yes. And then they would go, they would attack me. They would go, so did we understand that you have a mental health issue? They go, I go, yes, I do. And they go, did you take your medication that
day? Oh, yeah.
And it's like, whoa, you're going to attack? And so there was a point.
But it sucks because it was just it was truly an accident.
It was truly an accident. And luckily everybody stayed alive. But there was one point, which I will always remember, where they go, okay, do you think you were driving the speed limit? And I go, I was, and then you have to always be careful
with how you say things.
In
a deposition. They turn everything on.
So I go, because they can catch you in a lie. If I say, yes, but why weren't you driving? So I go, were you going the speed limit? And I go, I was driving with the flow of traffic. And they go, well, let me reward this, Jonathan, then. Do you think what a normal speed should be while driving on the freeway? And I go, like I said, I was driving on the flow with the flow of traffic. Until finally, they kept on repeating until I said, okay, you keep on asking me what is the speed limit then? And then my lawyer's like, whoa, recess, take a little stop. He's like, dude, you can't be asking questions back.
Yeah.
And they go, just answer the question and they'll get over it. Also, they're recording everything. And they go, they are? I go, okay, I'm going to have some fun with this. So I sat down and I'm like, is everything on the record? I'm like, okay, here we go. I love your tie, by the way. Is that on the record? I love your shirts. What's your name, Dr. Odge? It's a good day, isn't it? Sunny outside.
You're like the Michael Scott of this deposition.
And they had to stop it again and go, hey, wait a minute. But luckily, what ended up happening is they couldn't get anything on me. And Lyft had like a really good lawyer that at the end of it, they found that the woman whose car like spun lied about so many medical procedures. And that lie helped their lawyer say like she's not a good person, therefore like whatever she's saying is a lie. And at the very end, they settled, and my settlement was only $30,000
that you had to pay out of your pocket.
So instead of $1 million,
or insurance, or Hertz paid it. Cool.
And then just a few months ago, which is really cool, is that not really cool.
So
but
you got insurance when you rented
a rental car.
Yeah,
I made sure to get like the premium.
Wow, insurance. Good for you. That's smart.
Like everything was like aligned.
Like, I feel like nobody ever does that. Nobody gets the insurance when they get a rental car.
My life, you never know.
Yeah. Well, I think if you didn't have. Because you didn't have health insurance, you were probably like, maybe I should get this because it's obviously a lot cheaper than just a monthly health insurance premium to get it for like one time or whatever.
Yeah.
Or however many times you're using the car. This is making me think of, did you know that I almost died at birth?
What happened?
I almost died at birth. I mean, technically, I almost died at birth. It's a weird story. So when my mom was in the delivery room,
yeah,
I was breached, which means I was coming out feet first.
Oh my God. So they had to like,
so the doctor C-section. Had to get, no, the doctor had to get on top of my mom literally and like move me around in her uterus.
Yeah.
Like touch her stomach and stuff and move me around. And it's very painful for my mom. And as he's doing that, I flatline for like a second or two.
Was the umbilical cord over your neck?
I think
something?
So.
Yeah.
They don't really know. They assume so, or it could have been just like because he was. It's like weird. Like we don't know.
Right.
I flatline, and everyone just like pauses, and then I can't. And then my heart starts to beat again, and then or like the it picks up on the whatever the EKG or whatever that's called. Beep beep beep, and I come back, and now I'm head first, and then I'm born.
Again, like. To be alive, I know there's like almost 8 billion people living on this world.
Yeah.
Like, look, we're alive. It's
like, isn't that crazy?
It's a miracle to be alive.
Like the chances of me breaching and the chances of that, the procedure the doctor did to make me like, and I literally could have died. And also like many people who get the umbilical cord stuck around their neck either die or they come out with like major health effects. So like if it was around my neck, it was for like, truly a moment, because usually that could turn into like cerebral palsy or like some really, you know, life altering mental illness or disease. And I think about that a lot. Isn't that crazy?
Dude, you're alive.
I know I'm alive.
That is fucking crazy.
I can't imagine what my parents were going through, like,
dude,
hearing their baby like flatline for even just 1 second. My mom said it was like truly like 1 to 2 seconds of just like beep.
And probably her life was like flashing behind her.
Yeah, she was like, oh my God. Crazy. I mean, it's so, I mean, even, and also thinking about like my grandparents being Holocaust survivors and everyone in my family being murdered, but I'm here like that. I mean, the chances of that happening, like, let me, I don't know.
We're so lucky. But what's your question?
I don't know if I told you this story. So my grandpa, when he was in concentration camp, and when he was there, there was a outbreak of typhus,
right,
which is like a disease. And, the doctor in this concentration camp was giving people a vaccine or antidote in a serum to some people. Mm-hmm. And then he was giving to the other half of the people who had typhus a serum that would kill them because they had too many people with typhus and they had to eradicate them.
So it was like 50-50.
So it was like 50-50. And my grandpa got the vaccine that made him live. Like, that could have easily gone the other way. Isn't that crazy? Like, there's so many moments that in World War II, like, my entire lineage could have been just obliterated. And it didn't. Just by luck.
Just by, like, literally, like, how many times have you almost gotten in a car accident or almost tripped or almost fallen? And luckily, you are fucking alive.
And you're like, that could have been bad. Anyways, you want to watch Station 11?
So, speaking about grandparents and World War II. By the way, I'm so sorry about the Holocaust and that fucking
thank
sucks.
You. That's your, it's your fault.
It is my fault. Yeah. Adolf Hitler fucking
yeah,
sucks.
Yeah, you're Adolf Hitler.
No, but I mean, you have...
Adolf Hitler fucking sucks. Am I right, folks?
Yes. Do you have any stories, though? Like, as in, did they tell you stories about the Holocaust? Like, did you learn a lot about it from your grandparents?
Yeah.
What is one thing that, like, really resonates with you to this day of a story that you're like, oh my God?
So when my grandpa grew up in like a shtetl in Poland, mm-hmm. like a dirt road, like straw house roof, like the ground is dirt and stone, you know. And when, so he grew up very poor, and when he got wind of the Nazis coming, he understood that this would be bad because his whole life, he was, anti-Semitism was a big part of it before Nazis. Like in Poland, like people didn't like Jews. In his town, people didn't like Jews. So when he got wind that the Nazis were invading Poland, he knew it was going to be especially bad because, you know, hopefully if that happened again in America, there's enough people here that would just not put up with that.
Mm-hmm.
But in Poland, people didn't like Jews to begin with, you right. know? So they were like, he knew it would be bad. So he told his family, like, we need to leave. We need to run away. Like, I don't know where, but we need to go. And his dad, my great-grandpa, Moses Findling, Moshe, said, we're not going. And my grandpa said, well, I'm going. And he got on horseback, packed his things, and took off. And then my great-grandpa got on his horse and chased him into the woods and was like, whoa. You're not leaving. You're not abandoning your family. You're coming back. It's going to be fine. So my grandpa did. He came back. And then... you know, within weeks later, most of his immediate family, they didn't even get to go to concentration camp. They were murdered on site.
Shot, boom.
Yeah, because they were, you know, older. Maybe they weren't fit to work or whatever. Wow. My grandpa was like a young man. He was like 15 years old. Like he was capable, strong, you know. I mean, it's just crazy. Like it's like family is so important, but sometimes it can make you, it's like love can make you like blind and make bad decisions. Wow. You know, he didn't want to blow up his life, blow up his family, but he didn't see that the future, that there was no future the way it was, you know? Another story.
Well, first off.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. It's crazy. Another story is my grandpa escaped from concentration camp like 6 times. Like he's like a superhero. He did it so many times.
And they would always catch him, put it back in.
They always catch him.
And they never killed him.
And they never killed him. Wow. And he was always escaping to, cause he would hear about like a family member of his, like somewhere like living in a village, like in hiding. So, he, you know, he would be like his whole life. It's really beautiful. Like he was always in search of family. And I think there was one particular story that he told me he knew or thought his brother was out of concentration camp living in a town or whatever in Poland. So he escaped and he lived in the woods, like on his trek to finding, to going to look for his brother.
How do you skip, like through a fence? Or?
Yeah, like through a fence, dig a hole, like, that's, you know, amazing. Wait till everyone goes to sleep, you know, truly like movie shit, you know, right. Like The Rock, you know? And he like lived in the woods on like, I don't know, like leaves and berries for like 6 weeks.
Jesus Christ.
And there was one particular night where it was raining so bad. And he like, he was like purely just suffering. Like he's like, I can't do this. And he sees horse and carriage in the distance coming towards him. And he's like, oh fuck. Like I'm going to get caught. Cause yeah. if you spot a Jew at that time,
right.
You have to report it.
Poor porter shot on sight.
Yeah. So this horse and carriage approaches him and the guy comes out and says something to the effect of, I couldn't sleep tonight. Something made me feel like I needed to come into these woods.
Wow.
And my grandpa like got down on his knee and crossed himself so he wouldn't think he was Jewish. Mm-hmm. And the guy said, like, I think he like still knew my grandpa was Jewish somehow and was like, can I help you? Like, what can I do for you?
Wow.
And the guy like took him in and like fed my grandpa and like gave him like clean clothes, let him spend the night. And then my grandpa was like off to, in search of his brother, who ended up being in concentration camp. He wasn't where he thought he was.
Did his brother die in concentration camp?
His brother, I believe, died in concentration camp. Oh my God.
Well, first off, the carriage guy, he saved. He gave him proper,
just gave him a night of rest. Decent rest, which, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stories.
It's so weird how you're like propel. Like, I don't know. Like life is so, it's like following your gut in a way to save a life or save yourself.
Yeah, that story, like if you're listening, it is like kind of hard to believe. You're like, what the fuck was this carriage guy doing? Like what? He woke up in the middle of the night, felt like he needed to go into the woods. Like if my dog wakes me up in the night to go pee, I'm like, fuck off. I'm sleeping. Like,
right.
Something compelled this guy to go. Like what?
I mean, sometimes you just got to follow your gut.
Like another story is my grandpa wanted to go back and get some things at where he grew up,
mm-hmm.
like the Injmigrud in the home he grew up in. And he gets there and he sees that a new family is living in his home.
Right.
So he's like, I can't just go walk into my house.
Right.
So in the middle of the night, he goes into his backyard and cuts a layer of the grass and hides under this layer of the grass until he feels like there's no one in the house.
Yeah.
And then the next morning, the guy living in the house steps on him.
Whoa,
in the backyard. And
no.
Hears my grandpa make a noise. So he peels the grass up. My grandpa's there. And this guy wanted to help my grandpa. My grandpa's like, I used to live here. And he's like, okay.
I'm a Jew.
And the guy gave my grandpa like a ham sandwich. Mm. And my grandpa was a very religious man at the time. Jews can't eat ham, can't eat pork. Religious Jews. So my grandpa just started like crying of exhaustion because he felt so bad that he couldn't
eat the ham.
Like he couldn't eat what this guy was giving him, and he felt so lucky that this guy wanted to give him food. He felt bad that he had to like be like,
I can't have ham.
He ended up just eating the bread, but he felt so bad that like he didn't want to. This guy's helping him. You know, my grandpa doesn't have a lot of options. And here he is, like, still, like, holding on to, like, his religion.
Oh, wow.
It's, like, so weird. It's so weird,
but yet
so confusing.
But yet so beautiful.
Yeah, like, he was like, oh, I still. But then my grandparents, I think my grandma left the war still believing in God. And my grandpa left the war not believing in it as much.
It's like, why would God do this?
Yeah, but they both. But it's interesting how like she, it made her still believe in God, maybe believe even more in God
because she was like, I'm alive. Whereas he thought like, why would God kill all these people?
Yeah, why would God do this?
It's kind of weird, like when my conservative friend decides to equate people showing their vaccine card as, you know,
oh yeah,
in the same line as showing a David star, you know.
Yeah. What's really sad is my grandma, and please we can move on to it.
No, I definitely want to.
My grandma grew up like pretty wealthy.
Yeah.
And, you know, she'll talk about her childhood and like her grandfather, my great grandfather was like a businessman, and like they had a great apartment. She had all these sisters. And when and then like after the war, my grandmother had nothing.
And so she had to rebuild.
Yeah. But like you never, what's cool. So when my grandma passed away recently.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
And my dad, so the Nazis took all your things when you went to concentration camp. They took them. If it was valuable, they collected it and hopes to one day make a museum of the Jews. Look at this race that was terrible for our country or our society. You know, this is a museum where you can see what we eradicated. That was a big plan of theirs. And so they took their shoes, and my grandma's a wealthy woman, a lot of style, had a lot of clothes, a lot of shoes. They took them all away. But my grandpa died. I'm going to send you this picture. When she died, my dad was cleaning out her house.
Yeah.
She died with like 80 pairs of shoes. Isn't it so beautiful? Because in her mind, she was like, you're not going to fucking take my shoes.
You're not going to take my shoes.
I am going to die. You're going to take my shoes? I'm going to die with 80 pairs of shoes. Wow. Fuck you.
I have so many goosebumps right
now. Isn't that crazy? And I always thought about my grandma. I was like, oh, wow, she was very lavish, had this good style, like sophisticated in my eyes. And I never thought anything of it. I thought it was just like something that she just liked. But now I think for her, it was like a fuck you to what was done to her.
Yeah, fuck you. Fuck you for trying to take
my family, my things I like. Like, I'm not going to let you do it.
And I'm going to take it all back in a way. And this is how I'm taking it back.
And I think like for her, she, you know, never was able to let go of the trauma in some ways. You know, she woke up with that every day. I'm sure she thought about it all the time. What they, you know, her sister's dying, her parents dying. And I think in a lot of ways, the clothes and the things, like for her, was just something, was what she loved, was it something she could have still.
You know what I'm thinking about? And I'm going to segue to kind of like equating this to your grandparents' life in World War II.
Yeah.
So you had the Nazis in this case. And for my, since I'm Filipino,
yeah,
for my grandparents, it was the Japanese.
Yeah.
And my grandmother passed away like last year. And I'm now thinking about, as you're talking, so many different things that probably affected her and why she did the things that she did today. An example, well, first off, is my grandfather, you know, fought for the Filipino Rangers, which is like really cool. And when he was 18 or 19 years old, he was part of the Bataan March. Bataan March is this, like these soldiers who were captured by the Japanese, they have to like go and walk in this heat as they trail to this, you know, prisoner of war camp. And as they're walking, it's like more than like a marathon they go. And he remembers, see, unlike your culture, maybe a little bit, this is like Filipino Asian culture where a lot of this stuff, my grandfather wanted to be completely silent about it. But
very common for the Jews.
Very, very common, the same. To tell.
Well, that's what a lot of people say about like Jews, is like we're scared to call out anti-Semitism because we don't want to make a fuss about it. We don't want to make a big deal about it. But I'm talking about
like the history.
Okay.
Like you, like to hear your grandparents tell you these stories.
Oh, I understand. You're saying your grandparents would never talk about this.
They would rarely.
Yeah.
And I wish to God that I pressed even further, but I will always remember how he would say to me, like he would sit me down at the age of like 9 or 8, and he would always hug me as I would play with his chin, and he would always say in Tagalog, or in this case, I can't say it correctly, but he's like, always love your family because you never know when you'll lose them. And I never got that until I was around like 8 or 9, when one day I'm like, hey, tell me about that Bataan March, because mom told me that you were part of it. And the only thing that he told me is like, you have to walk a lot. And he remembers like anybody that would go and drink water, the Japanese would just shoot them on sight. And one of those individuals that got shot on sight was his uncle that was fighting with him along the side. So they finally get to the POW. He lost his uncle. He sees all this, you know, all these friends that have died, and also Americans that are there, his allies have passed. And he would say that the Japanese would only give them like one, like grain, like one little, like tiny little scoop of rice a day. And then on top of that, they would hang him by his thumbs, which was crazy. And how that kind of equates, now thinking about him now, when I lived with him 8 or 9, he would always be like, always, like he would put rice and he was like, you have no idea how lucky you are to have this. Always finish your rice. Yeah. That was his like thing. He was like, always finish your rice.
Yeah.
Which I never understood, but now thinking about it. So that's like one thing. Number two, he lost everything. They, you know, the Japanese came and so when he passed, we went in the garage and he had about like 40 years of like 1950s to all the way to 1998 of just every single tool that he had, every single photo that he took. He took cameras and DVDs.
He never threw it out.
Every single paycheck.
My grandparents are the same way.
And it just made me think like, oh my God. And then on top of that, my grandmother, who I always remember, she has boxes. She also has garage full of stuff over stuff over stuff over stuff. And it's really great. Like greeting cards, she would reuse them. So therefore, but she when she lost everything as well, I mean, she grew up in a very like affluent, so she was okay. She played piano for the Japanese. But she would always say this. She goes, you never know when anything will be taken. And Jonathan, I'm taking up this penny from the street, because she'd always walk and take the pennies from the street. I'm like, why are you doing that? She's like, well, Jonathan, a penny, a little penny saved is a penny earned.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is something. And that like sticks with me today, where I like, granted, like everyone wants to live like this minimal lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
but everything that I keep, like I have a suitcase full of just fucking memories
yeah.
that I never want to leave. And it just, it's kind of like I wish I was able to get more of why my grandparents were they were, and I'm kind of like jealous. The only, I would walk up the stairs and I would see my grandfather watch World War II movies or watch, like he was a vlogger before vlogging.
Yeah.
Like he would have videotapes upon videotapes. But one thing that I will always love about him is his love story. Can I tell it?
Yeah.
Really cool. And I want to love like that so much. But anyway, so my grandfather, after the war, went to Guam. And in Guam, there was a lot of Filipinos that were there. And my grandmother was playing the piano and she was like going up to be like a pageant. And my grandfather at the time was 33 and she was 23. He was 33 and she was 24. I'm getting, who cares about the age?
Yeah.
But anyway, he arrives there and he's an architect and he sees my grandmother playing the piano. And he's like, oh my God, this is the most beautiful woman that I've ever seen in my entire life. And all these other guys, they were like 6 foot, 5'10", 5'11", really wealthy. They would go up and they would try to always go on dates with her. My grandfather, 5'2",
mm-hmm.
a 33-year-old kind of like bald man,
mm-hmm.
nerdy as fuck, but the only thing that he had was a great smile. Mm-hmm. And he knew that he could use a smile. So he walks up and he's like, he smiles slowly and he turns to her and he goes, I want to take you on a date if you're okay with that, as he smiled. And my grandmother stops playing the piano and she looks at him and she told me, because I remember like as I sat her down, I really wanted to know this love story. And she goes, for some reason, I looked at his smile and I knew that he was a good man.
Mm.
And she said, yes. So he's like, okay, where can I pick you up? And my grandmother goes, if you're serious, I'll be here and I'll be ready for you at 6 p.m. My grandfather says, okay. Now, my grandfather is poor as fuck at this time, but he tries to, you know, like try to like get it all together.
Yeah.
So he dresses up in his best suit. He gets some flowers. He borrows a car from his friend, which is a convertible. He drives up exactly 6 p.m. and she says she looks good. I don't know what he saw because like I'm only getting the perspective of my grandmother in the story. And so she sees him, and my grandfather looks nice. He has the wonderful smile again. She gets in the car, and as they're driving in the convertible, he starts saying jokes. They're laughing. It begins to rain. And my grandmother's so poor, and the friend is also poor, he can't fucking put up the convertible. Like, mm-hmm. it won't go up. So they're getting drenched and really wet. And he's like, oh, no, no. And they were supposed to have, like, a picnic, but I guess they can't go there. So he finally pulls over to, like, a nearby, like, bar slash restaurant. He brings her out. They're drenched, and they're just wet.
Mm-hmm.
And they... And my grandfather's, like, nervous now. But he's like, oh, fuck, I fucked up. I fucked up. He sits down, and my grandmother says they're silent. They're just looking at each other. And she sees this, like, my grandfather's wearing, like, a white suit, right? So it's, like, wet. There's mud all over it. There's mud on her shoes. She's drenched. She's got, like, mud on her fucking nice little heels. And they look at each other. And my grandfather doesn't even say sorry. He just, like, holds out his hand. And she touches it. And then he just begins to smile and begins to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And then she begins to laugh. And she says, this is the moment where I knew that I would always be okay with this man. Holy shit. I just want to love like that. Like, she just knew. And then,
That's great, man.
I talked about, like, hey, how was he good in bed? And she laughed. And, but he's really good at dance. That's a great story, man.
I love that.
Yeah, like...
I don't think we could go past that.
It was like 1950 something.
That's amazing, dude. I love that story.
That's old love.
I love that story.
I
think that's a good thing to end on.
Really? Okay, good.
Unless you want to go more, but that was amazing. That gave me goosebumps. I feel good.
Yeah, we could talk about. I was going to talk about sex and like this girl, but we'll talk about.
I don't think I like the next time. I love the issues we covered. We went from weed to porn to fucking boxing to fucking death of dogs.
Grandparents, man.
To grandparents to love.
You teach so. They teach you so much.
Yeah, they do. They do. Well.
So on a love like that, you guys. Yeah, anyway, crew, thank you. So much. Remember, what can they do?
They can follow us on all platforms at The Bottle Club.
And, you know, why should they subscribe to us?
Because we really want to fucking beat Toyota.
Yeah, fuck Toyota,
for
dude.
For some reason.
You know what? Forget Toyota. Toyota, we're after you. It's going to take some time, but we got this, okay? Yeah. We're going to figure this out.
Yeah, we're trying to get more subscribers than Toyota.
Yes, exactly.
And where can they find you, Jonathan?
They can find me at Jonathan Garano. Of course, follow the Bottle Club pod.
They can find me at Noah Built the Ark.
And guys, 5 stars on Spotify, 5 stars on the Apple review. And if you do, guess what we do? We send you a video DM. Anyway, y'all, love y'all. LUV. Peace.